Dark. Water. The swell stops. Not a gradual easing, not the tide turning, not weather settling. The sea holds its breath. One wave begins to rise and does not finish. The water goes flat under it like a held note. Rigging slack. The canvas hangs and will not stir. The hulls creak, the old complaint of the tide kinds. Bones, the sound that has kept them company since the river, gone. The seabird's din, gone. The world's machinery of sound, one by one, all of it, gone. Kale's heartbeat is the loudest thing aboard. She stands at the rail with her palm pressed to her sternum, the place where the wire has been hollow since the vault, and the hum in her chest rises to answer the stillness, unbidden, the way a struck string answers a room that has gone quiet. She suppresses it. Old training. The Dales. Her mother's hand over her mouth. The suppression costs her a cramping quiet she cannot explain, and not where the note wanted to live. Then, under the water, very low, a note. Not a hum. Not wind. Not the sea. A weight, held below the keel, patient, older than the ship, older than the strait. It waits. The morning after Thren fell away, the tide kind found open water, and Kale stood at the stern rail as the city's smear of light went out behind them like the last lamp in a longhouse. Valani did not look back. She had been up since before the dark tide, mending a tear in the mainsail with a Saravai work tune under her breath, and by the time the river's brown turned to slate under the bar she was reading the ship the way Kale had watched her read a room, hands on the tiller, head tilted at the rigging's pitch, correcting course by half a degree for a current she felt through her boots. Watching her, Kale saw a competence with no seam in it, and it was the first whole thing she had seen since the vault. They anchored on the second day off a fishing village, stilt huts on legs over the water, a jetty of loose planks, the seabird's din so thick it was a weather. They needed water, Valani said. They would not pay for it, because the village traded it for the mending of a net, and the mending of the net took an afternoon. Kale hauled the cask up the jetty with her back to the village and the whole of her attention on the smudge of the horizon. And that was how she missed the figure at the end of the dock until he was close enough to see. No gray tunic. No warrant badge. No office at all, a salt-stained wool coat, a pack, a face that had walked a long coast in bad weather. He stopped at the foot of the gangplank and did not step aboard.
I am not here with a warrant.
Varen said. His voice was the same, measured, formal, the sentences complete as scripture.
Or an order, or an errand of any kind. I am here because I have seen what the watch will do next, and I have come to sell the seeing of it.
Valani's face did not move.
We don't carry priests.
Correct.
You hunted her.
She said it flat, the flat of a woman naming a cargo's weight.
Twice. You let her go twice, and I don't owe you a reading of what that means, but you do not board my ship.
Your ship?
Varen said.
Was marked at the quay. The man who marked it did not do so out of interest. There is a standing order, traitor, Inquisitor Rostad's order, to collect memory keepers at the border, and the order knows no borders. The mark means the net is closing behind you and ahead of you. It means the message is already on the road.
Then we are fast.
Valani said.
Faster than the road, slower than the pattern.
He did not move.
I know how Valdr's pursuit closes. I have closed it. I have watched it close. The watch will expect the marked ship to run the straight southern run, the known passage, the quick one. There is a trawler's route up the Cold Father's Edge. The watch does not use it. It may be that no one will think to look there.
silence on the dock. The seabirds argued. Kale stood with the cask at her feet and her palm against her sternum, and the hollow where the wire had been was very still, and she remembered the resonance on the temple steps, the ground answering her hum, and the man who had heard it and let her walk.
Trust is not the issue,
Melon said, stepping to the rail.
It was never the issue. The issue is the mark and the pattern, and a man who can read both.
He said it gently, the way he said everything, one hand on the line securing the gangplank.
A man who knows the net is worth more aboard than behind us. The net is closing, Kale. The trade is simple. He knows the closing of it.
Valani did not say welcome. She looked at Baron for a long moment, and then she said,
"The rope at the stern needs a hand on it,"
and went back to her rigging. The cost was named later, in the cabin, in one flat sentence from Melon that no one answered. The ship now carried a witness to what Kale had done in the lothouse. The Unsing had moved aboard in a salt-stained coat. That night Kale stood at the rail as the fishing village fell away, and she did not decide anything, because the decision had already been made for her. It was not trust. It was leverage. A man who knew the net, and the shape of the net behind them, and the trawler's route up the cold Father's Edge where no one would look.
"Rain's coming,"
she said to the dark water, and did not know whether she meant weather. 3 days of good wind. 3 nights of clear sky. The ship became a world, and Kale learned the shape of it the way you learn the shape of a room by its silences. Valani kept the watch order. She read the rigging's music the way other people read a page, a stays pitch that meant the wind had shifted a point and would shift again before the glass ran out. She mended sail humming Saravai work tunes under her breath, and she dead-reckoned by the feel of the current through her boots. And at dusk she stood at the rail and named the coming weather to herself in a language Kale could not follow but could nearly sing. Every dusk, Melon recited the stars. He stood at the bow rail with his hands wide on the wood and named them one by one, in order, in the catalog rhythm of a man reciting a text he has copied 100 times. It was navigation, Kale understood, the same work the Thren pilots did with instruments, done aloud, held in the voice because the voice was the oldest instrument there was. And somewhere in the middle of the naming, the rhythm settled into a refrain he never skipped.
Hold the rail. Hold the breath. Hold the note you carry north.
The first night she thought it was ritual. The second night she understood it was a rope, the one thing on the open water that still kept its shape when he pulled on it. Varin worked the ropes like penance. He did not pray where anyone could see, but he spliced line at the stern until his hands were scored, his formal sentences cracking into silence, the way a man's voice cracks when he stops reading aloud. He watched her when he thought himself unobserved. It pressed on her like a draft, pressure, then the closing of it. And under it all, the hollow in her chest. She had come aboard with the wire gone, the presence that had hummed under her palm since she could remember, hollow since the vault. On the first night at sea she pressed her palm to her sternum and found the emptiness, and it was worse than the hum had ever been. Because the hum had always been there and she had always been fighting it, and now there was nothing to fight. On the second night, a thread. She felt it before she heard it, a hair of a note, tentative, at the edge of what she could reach. The wire, restringing itself, slow, the way a struck note comes back in a quiet room. She did not move. She did not push it down. She let it hum its one thin thread against her palm and lay awake in the dark while the ship creaked around her, listening to it like a voice she had thought lost at sea. On the third night, when the wind was steady and the sea ran true and Valani had the watch, Kale opened the fragment. She did it in the cabin, alone, with the lamp turned low, the way she had promised herself on the deck of the ship in Thren, when she could breathe. When the shape of what she was had stopped moving under her like weather. She had not been sure, exactly, when that had happened. It had happened at sea. The seal came away without a fight, Valdris states Mark, the wax cold, the leather beneath it warm. She unrolled the strip on the table with her palms flat, the way Melon had taught her to handle a scroll you could not afford to lose. One word. She felt it before she read it, in her teeth, the way you feel a struck fork, the first tongue, the language of the world's beginning, sealed under Valdris's mark and carried north in her pack through an ash desert and a city and the whole machinery of its priests. A man had died for a hand's width of this leather, she had watched it. She had unsung a song to take it. And the word it held was
shattered.
She said it aloud to test it, the first tongue's shape in her mouth like a stone, unfamiliar, heavier than one syllable should be, and the word did not so much leave her mouth as fall out of it. Waiting for the meaning the way you wait for a struck note to resolve. Nothing came. It described nothing she could see, answered nothing she could ask, pointed at nothing on the chart Melon kept in his satchel. After all of it, the trap, the unsing, the alarm, the flight, the fragment was one word, and the word told her nothing. The anticlimax sat in the cabin with her, patient as cargo. She had carried the question all the way from Thren, and the question had arrived, and the question was,
what is she carrying north?
A word she could not read. A sea she could not read. A gift she could not aim. The swallowed stone of the unsing still heavy in the hollow where her wire used to be, except the wire had come back now, a thread, and the thread and the stone did not fit together in her chest, and she did not know which one she was. She rolled the fragment, sealed it, and went up on deck. Melon was at the bow naming the last of the evening stars, the lamps of the sky, he called them, the ones that never went out. She stood at the rail beside him and the refrain came to her, unbidden, the way a tune you have heard 100 times comes to you when you need it.
Hold the rail. Hold the breath. Hold the note you carry north.
She held the rail. She held the breath. She held the note, the thread in her chest, her own again, the first thing in her that had felt like hers since the vault. That night she slept with the hum in her chest and did not try to quiet it, the first time since the Dales, and she chose, one day at a time, to be heard. She did not know she had chosen it. The thread under her palm hummed its one thin note to the dark, and the sea answered with nothing, and she slept. The water changed at the strait's southern reach, and Valani tasted it before anyone. Not the sea's ordinary salt, the spray on her wrist came up cold, a cold with texture to it, the cold father's deep water meeting the warmer run. She licked her wrist without thinking, the way she tasted cargo, and the air had a new weight on it, and under the keel the current had changed its mind. The first swell ran against them at a wrong angle, within weather's range, once, twice, and then outside it. Valani watched the broken crests and did not say anything, because there was nothing yet to say, only something to read. The tide kind labored. Canvas drew and dragged. The chart in the cabin said one thing, the stars said another, and the water said a third, and the water was the one she trusted with her boots on. 3 hours in, the iron tide made itself known. The surface turned deep metallic gray, not darkening, tarnishing, like a struck coin left out in weather. Her throat was iron, warm, impossible out here. She had tasted it once before, on a wrecker's run off the thumb, 3 days of water running against them, and the run had ended in a boatyard and a new name for the ship she had lost. That ship had been called something else. This one was her second body, rebuilt from the first salvage, and this one was learning the same lesson. Her boots took it first, the vibration up through the deck, up her spine, a note held underwater, low, patient, the sort of sound a ship's hull is not supposed to make. No bow break, no stern race, the water ran against them like a rope being hauled the wrong direction, and the tide kind groaned in a register the hull had never used in all her years of river and salt. On deck, Mellon's litany faltered. The stars were where they should be, he had named them, and they were in their places, and the current said otherwise, and he re-recited the order as if the sea might answer.
Hold the rail. Hold the breath. Hold the note you carry north.
And his scholar's hands were shaking on the rail, and the catalog rhythm came out wrong, the way a text comes out wrong when you copy it in a hurry. Varen said nothing. He had one hand on the backstay and his face pointed into the gray, and every formal sentence of his voyage had gone somewhere he was not letting it out. And Kale. Valani did not have time to watch Kale. That was the thing she would hold against herself later, in the fog, when the note mattered. She had the helm, and the trough, and the whole of the ship's weight leaning through her hands, and she had no spare attention for the girl standing at the rail with her palm pressed to her sternum. But she felt it. Everyone felt it, the moment the ship's sound changed, and the gray water leaned, and something in the wind that was not wind went through the rigging like a hand checking a line. Kale heard it. Kale heard it, and did not say so, and the not saying was the loudest thing on the deck. In 3 hours it passed, the way it had come, the gray lifting off the water like a film, the iron taste going out of the air, the deep vibration receding under the keel until it was not there and they were all pretending they had not heard it. Valani eased the helm left, into the cold father's proper flow, and the ship answered like a hand opening. The wrongness was legible to everyone now. It had a shape and a name and a location, and the location was under them.
The strait is not weather.
Valani said to the water, in Saravai, the way you say a name you are about to write in a ledger. The sea did not answer. It seldom did. On a morning no one counted, the water went still without warning. No easing. Kale was at the rail coiling a line when the swell died under her, literally died, mid-breath, the way the cold open had promised. One wave started to rise and did not finish. The rigging hung slack. The canvas sagged. The hull's creak, the ship's old complaint, stopped, and the seabird's din had stopped some hours before, and the silence arrived all at once, heavy, the way a room goes quiet when everyone in it is listening. The tide kind stopped, not anchored, held. Glass before a bad morning, the surface flat, dark, reflecting nothing. The crew stopped talking. Mellon stopped at the rail with his mouth open on a star name, and his mouth closed, and the closing made a sound in the stillness that was almost a shout. The hum in her chest rose to answer it. It was the thread, grown strong in 3 days, her wire, restrung, humming a low clear note against her palm, answering the stillness the way a struck bell answers a quiet room. And Kale suppressed it. Old training, all 19 years of it, her mother's hand over her mouth, the Dale's whole doctrine of silence in one reflex, and the suppression cost her a cramping quiet she could not explain, a knot in her chest where the note wanted to live, a small locked ache she had never felt before, because the wire had never had anything to answer before. Something beneath them would not look back. She felt it the way you feel a draft in a closed room, the absence where the answer should have been. The strait had a memory older than charts, Mellon would have said. She felt it as a shape under the keel, patient, holding still the way you hold still for something you are waiting for. And her hum, suppressed, cramping in her chest, had been trying to answer it. At dusk the first star went out. Not cloud. Veth's first light above the horizon grew, and then it was not there, and the horizon line was not there either, the water's edge dissolving into a pale gray that moved. The fog arrived as a wall without end, rising out of the sea the way weather rises out of a held breath, no horizon, no star, no compass to lend. Mellon's litany stopped mid-name. Valani's voice came from the helm, low and level.
Bells. Every quarter. Sound the way through.
The known world was gone behind them. Ahead there was only fog, and in it, for Kale, at the very edge of hearing, a note that was not wind. She reached for the rail and held it.
Hold the rail. Hold the breath. Hold the note you carry north.
In the fog, the note waited. It had been waiting, she understood later. It was the same note that had lain under the keel in the glasscom, heavy, patient, older than the ship. She had thought the strait was the obstacle. The strait was the doorway. Inside the fog, the air was warm. Wrong season warm, wet, the warmth of a closed room with something breathing in it, no wind, no horizon, no light to steer by, the tide kind. Sailing through gray the way you walk through a held breath. Velani bells the watch. It was the first thing she did, the brass bell at the stern, one stroke every quarter, and the sound was the only fixed thing in the world, bell, then the ship's slow creak, then the muffled slap of water, then the creak answered, a half second later, by the same creak, in a place no rope was straining. Kale heard it before she could stop herself hearing it. She stood a hand's breadth from the rail and listened to the ship make its sounds and the fog make them back, the strain of a line echoed by a strain that was not rigging, the tread of boots on deck returned by a tread that did not land. The pattern held. Not random. The fog was learning the ship the way a room learns the shape of the people in it.
Can you hear it?
Melon whispered, the first thing he had said in hours. His book was open in his hands, the one with the names, and he was whispering them one by one, not for navigation, there were no stars to name, but to keep them alive. The names of the Betweenstone, he called them. The names of what the strait kept. Kale did not answer. The hum in her chest had not stopped since the glasscom. It sat under her palm like a held note, and she had stopped pressing it down. The suppression had cost her a cramping ache she could still feel, and out here, with the fog listening, pressing it down felt like hiding a lamp in a room full of searchers. Behind her, Viren began a prayer. It was the formal one. Kale heard the shape of it, the Valdris cadence, the same rhythm that had stood on the temple steps, and it stopped. Midword. His mouth stayed open on a syllable that did not come, and his eyes moved, reading the fog the way a man reads a room for exits, and she understood with a cold certainty what had stopped him. The silence around him was listening to the shape of the prayer. The fog held the half-word. It waited to hear how it ended. He did not finish it. He closed his mouth and put his hand on the backstay, and the fog let the half-word go. The hum in Kale's chest leaped. A hair of a note, a thread she had been holding, it slipped out of her, thin, barely audible, the way breath slips out of a tired sleeper, and the fog leaned toward it. A lean, the way a ship heels, the whole gray weight of the air shifting a degree around the note, toward the bow, toward her. The creak that was not rigging stopped. The tread that was not boots stopped. Everything in the fog was listening to the hair of a note she had not meant to let out.
Something has heard me.
She thought, and the thought had no fear in it yet. It had wonder, and the wonder was worse. Keep the bell. Keep the note. Hold the rail. The hours stacked like water in a leaky hull. Velani kept the bells, and the bells kept the world at stroke, pause, stroke, and under the bells the fog went on learning them. The ship's older sounds came back answered, then the newer ones, then the sounds of the people. Standing the midnight watch at the bow, Melon's voice came back to her, two cabins aft, a murmur that was not quite his, the names he was keeping alive coming back to her from the gray, breath for breath. Velani's step crossed the deck behind her and she did not turn, and the step was returned a half second later, beyond the rail, in the water, where no step could be. She was still holding the hair of a note. She had stopped trying not to. It was the only thing in the fog that was hers. The whisper came at her own exhale. She let her breath out, the long, slow breath of someone standing watch in the dark, and the fog gave it back to her. Not an echo, an answer, timed to her own breath, softer than her breath, a voice that was almost Kale's own, giving her breath back to her the way a mother gives a child's word back. She stopped breathing. The fog waited. It did not rush. It waited, the way you wait for a sound to come again, and Kale stood with her lungs empty and her hand pressed to her sternum and the thread of her hum the only sound she was making, and she knew, the way she had known about the wire, that the voice was not wind and not sea and not any living thing she had a name for. She breathed out. The fog answered her. She breathed in. The fog held its breath with her.
Hello.
She did not say. The word sat behind her teeth, unvoiced, because voicing it felt like the prayer Varen had stopped, like putting a shape into the silence and letting it be read. The fog waited for the word she had not said. It was still waiting when the bell rang the change of watch, and the sound cut through, and Kale turned away from the rail with her heart doing something slow and terrible in her chest, not fear. Not yet. Something with its hand on her shoulder from inside, the way the wire used to touch her when rain was coming. The rain was coming. She did not know from which direction. The voices escalated the way sound escalates in a well, not louder, closer. On the second day in the fog, the whispers matched the crew. Their own breathing came back to every one of them, Melon's dry scholar's breath at the chart table, Valani's steady sailor's breath at the helm, Varen's measured breath, held and released in the formality of a man who does nothing unexamined. Kale heard her own, of course, but by then she was listening for it, and the listening was the trap, and she could not stop. And then the fog said her word. It came out of the gray in a voice that was almost Kale's, her register, her Dale's cadence, the shape of her vowels, with the emphasis inverted, the word turned wrong, the way a familiar tune sounds wrong played slowly.
Shatter.
The word she had carried north in her pack, sealed, unspoken. The word she had spoken once, alone, in a lamplit cabin, and rolled up, and sealed. The word the fog had taken from her mouth and kept and was now giving back to her, in her own voice, made wrong. Her chest did the decision for her. The wire under her palm answered before she consented, the note rising out of her, unbidden, the same grammar as the lothouse, the same reaching that had moved through her like weather in the vault room. Her voice came up, a thread, then a note, and the note went out into the gray toward the word, and the gray took it. Somewhere in the fog, the word and the note touched, and something turned toward the touching the way a held breath turns toward a sound. The exchange had landed.
Shatter.
The fog said again, in her voice, and this time the word had a question in it, her own cadence, her own Dale's rising inflection, asking her a question she had been carrying since the vault.
What am I, if I can do that?
The fog was not asking it. The fog was giving it back to her, whole, the way you give a thing back to its owner. And Kale stood at the rail with the note still out of her, stretched thin between her chest and the gray, and did not know if she had begun the exchange or answered it, and understood, in the ringing quiet, that it did not matter. It had begun the moment she opened the fragment. It had begun before that. It had begun when the sea fell still. She asked it. The question came out of her before she had decided to ask it, in her own voice, into the gray.
What are you?
The fog held the question a long moment, read the shape of it the way it had read Varen's half-prayer, turned, considered, and then answered with the question turned around, in the one phrase it would ever speak, in her voice, made wrong, emphasis inverted. The way a mirror shows you the side of your own face you never see.
You carry a word that was never meant to be carried alone.
The fog parted. Not for a shape. Not for a shadow. The gray drew back from the bow in a slow circle, the way water draws back from a stone, and Kale looked into the space it made and saw nothing. Not absence. Not emptiness. Attention. The word came to her whole, the way the decision about the fragment had come, the fog was not empty. It was looking at her. It had been looking at her since before she entered it. It had been waiting for a memory keeper to come north, and she had not found it in the fog, she had answered it, the note she had let out of her chest, the answer to a summons she had been carrying since the Dales without knowing. The word was not cargo. It had never been cargo. It was the other half of a summons, and the summons required the word and the note both, and she had brought the word north and the note had come with her in her chest, and the strait had known, and the deep world had known, and she had known, under everything, the way the wire knew when rain was coming. The fog closed. Gently, the way water closes over a stone. The gray drew back in, the circle filled, the sounds returned, the bell, the creak, the slap of water, and the presence withdrew, the way a breath is finally set down, and the sea went back to being sea, almost. Kale stood at the rail with both hands on the wood and the note spent and the hum in her chest wide awake, answering something at the edge of hearing, north. She had not found the something in the fog. The something had found her. And it had been waiting for her longer than she had been alive. No one slept that night. Below deck the ship breathed around them, the creak of the hull, the water against the strakes, and under the ship's breathing, the four of them lay awake in the dark and did not name what they had heard. The fog had matched their breath. The fog had spoken a word. The fog had parted, and something in it had looked at them, and the looking was still in the cabin, patient, the way a held note is still in a room after the bow has left the string. Kale lay in her hammock with her palm on her sternum and the hum a low thread under it, and she let the question that was hers alone, not the plots, not the voyages, hers, move through her the way the sea moved under the hull.
I thought I was bringing something to them. They were waiting for me to bring myself.
The unsing's unanswered question from the vault resized itself on open water.
What am I, if I can do that?
And out here there was no priest to answer it, no council, no price, no ledger, only the hum in her chest and what answered it, and the answer was the fog, and the fog had been waiting. She heard the crew's fear without seeing it, Melon's voice in the dark, reciting.
Hold the rail. Hold the breath. Hold the note you carry north.
The litany kept alive the way you keep a lamp alive in a storm, the last thing he could still order, the names of the stars a rope he was pulling on to keep the world his shape. Varen had stopped working the ropes an hour past, and the silence where his formal sentences had been was a presence in the cabin. His hands moved, slow, deliberate, the scrape of line, the work of a man holding himself together with his hands because the words had failed. The watch above heard their own names in the fog. Valani had said it flatly, coming below.
The bells are mine. The names are theirs.
And then Valani was there, at the foot of the hammock, standing in the dark the way she did everything, deliberate, gone before you heard her come. She said nothing at first. She stood, and Kale could feel her reading the cabin the way she read cargo, weighing what was there, what was worth keeping, what could be jettisoned. Then, dry, Saravai, the flat delivery of a woman stating a manifest.
You're being ridiculous.
Kale had learned the translation on the road, the way you learn a foreign coin. You're being ridiculous. Meant. I am undone. It meant Valani had watched her do something no living thing should be able to do, and could not protect her from the consequence of it, and would not say so.
Which part?
Kale said.
The part where you lie in the dark deciding whether to be afraid of something that already knows your name.
A pause, and when the voice came again it was quieter, almost level, and in it the traitor's hand was trembling on the wall of the stairwell.
You sang at it. You stood at the rail and put your note into the fog, and the fog took it, and you are still standing. Whatever it is waiting for, it did not want you dead in the water tonight. It wanted.
She did not finish. The words sat between them in the dark, and Kale heard the shape of it, the shape Valani would not say. You. The decision came to Kale whole, the way decisions had been coming to her since the vault. She would not suppress the hum again. Whatever the fog was waiting for, she would carry it openly, the note out, the thread unheld, the way she had carried the fragment north. The strait would test what she was worth.
Bells are mine,
Valani said.
The hum is mine,
Kale said. Valani made a sound that might have been a laugh and might have been the ship settling.
Ridiculous,
she said, and went up the ladder, and Kale lay in the dark with the hum open under her palm and slept, the first real sleep of the fog, with the note answering something at the edge of hearing, north. Mellon's chart cabin was the smallest room on the ship, a table, a lamp, a stool, the smell of old paper and the sea, and the charts he unrolled on it were like nothing Kale had seen in Thren. They were not the Navigators Guild's charts, all coastlines and soundings and expiry dates. These were fragments, half-charts, pieced, the paper different ages and different hands, the ink a dozen colors, bought, Mellon said, from Vorn Run traders. Only a dozen Thren captains attempted the run. The charts came back with them or did not come back at all. His own marginal notes crowded the edges in a hand gone tight, smaller and smaller, as if the margin had been shrinking for years.
The Strait's voices,
Kale said.
You know what they are.
I know what they are not.
He did not look up from the chart.
They are not the Drowned. The Drowned went silent. Every wreck, every grave, every ship the Strait has taken over the centuries, all of it, silent. There is no song in them. There is not even an echo of one.
He traced a line on the fragment with his fingertip.
The voices are older than the wrecks. They are older than the charts, older than the present peace. The traders call them the Between Stone. The sound a stone makes between one musical note and the next, the thing that is neither note nor silence. That is what is in the fog. It has been there since before the Strait was a Strait.
How long have you known we'd need these?
The deflection was a whole one, practiced, worn smooth with use.
Reports. They are only reports. A scholar collects reports the way a sailor collects ropes, against the day he needs them.
Brother Mellon.
He looked up at her, finally, and his scholar's hands, the hands that had shaken through the iron tide, were still on the chart, and he decided, and the deciding cost him visibly.
I have wanted to see Vorn since I was a boy in the Scriptorium, the UR Grim.
And here his voice changed, went cathedral, the voice of a man speaking a text he has loved too long to read without tenderness.
The UR Grim count time in thaws. Once the ice breaks and the strait is passable, that is a thaw. They have kept the tally for 800 years.
He turned the chart, and there it was, in the margin, in that tight hand, a row of marks, 37 of them, the last one raw.
37 since the present peace. I am not here to study them, Kale. I am here to be the first Thren scholar to read a primary UR Grim text, and I have used the party, used you, the way the ledger used everyone. The voyage is my pilgrimage. The pilgrimage needed a ship.
The words sat in the cabin. Kale looked at the 37 marks, at the tight hand that had made them, at the boy in the Scriptorium who had wanted to see a place no Thren scholar had ever read, and she chose.
Show me the whirlpool,
she said. He blinked. The deflection had been braced for, the acceptance had not. He found it on the chart, a wide spiral inked in another hand, older, annotated in his margin. A mile across. Spinning since before the present piece. The Uargrim say it is the mouth of a shaper, give it a wide berth, and do not sing near it. The last clause he had underlined. Three times.
I will not sing near it.
Kale said, and meant it, and did not know it was a promise the strait would keep for her. Behind them, at the door, Valani's voice came dry and level.
A mile across, spinning since before the present piece. That's not a whirlpool, scholar. That's an appointment.
And then, softer, to the dark beyond the door.
Give it a wide berth, and do not sing near it.
A pause.
The sea keeps its own appointments.
The map had gained a layer. Kale left the chart cabin with the deep charts in her head and the margin marks in her chest, and the alliance held, strained, the way a rope holds when the far end is anchored in something you cannot see. He was using them. She let it hold, because out here, in the fog, they were all each other had. The fog did not attack. That was the thing Kale learned to live with. In the slow hours that followed, the presence had matched their breath, spoken her word, parted for her, and then it had settled, the way a hunt settles into a watching, and the watching was communicated entirely through the strait's acoustics. The fog parted ahead of the bow and closed behind the stern. Not a path, a conduct. The gray drew back a ship's length before the tide kind. And breathe shut a ship's length after, the way water conducts a hand drawing through it, and Kale stood at the rail as the world opened and closed around them, gently, north. The wrong currents, the ones that had fought the keel since the iron tide, resolved into the cold father's proper flow, as if the water itself had decided to carry them. The wind, which had died with the glass calm, returned in a breath just large enough for the sails. They were being steered. The whirlpool of Vorn passed to port at a distance the chart said was impossible. It was a mile across, Kale had the shape of it in her head from Melon's chart, and the shape was undersold. The water turned on itself in a slow, patient spiral, and its center was not white water and not a hollow, it was a dark, featureless blue that went down forever, the blue of a held note, the blue of the space between one world and the next. Nobody sang near it. Kale's hum went quiet of its own accord as they passed, the first time it had gone quiet since the glass calm, and she pressed her palm to her sternum and felt the wire holding its breath, the way you hold your breath past a grave. On the other side of the whirlpool, the dread, the ratcheting, careful dread of the fog's learning, resolved into something stranger, and she could not name it until it was already true, they were not being hunted. They were being carried. The strait had taken them into itself, and it was bringing them somewhere, gently, the way a held breath is carried toward a word. Then the water under the hull changed. Not a swell. Not a current. A draw, as if the sea had inhaled, a slow deepening of the water under the keel, a gathering, the whole weight of the strait drawing itself up through the hull and into the still air. The fog held. The sails hung. The ship paused on the moment, and the hum in her chest answered the draw the way a struck fork answers a room that has gone quiet, and Varen's voice came from the stern, flat, stripped of every conditional, the first unconditional sentence of his voyage, in a voice that did not know it was formal anymore.
The water's gone wrong under us.
The sea drew its breath. The sea stood up. Not a storm from the sky. Valani had run the wailing winds, she had run them 20 times, dead reckoned through fog, read her ship like her own body, and she knew the skies weather the way she knew the face of a bad cargo. This was not sky. The sky hung gray and still and wrong, and the water under them rose. Not a swell. Not a wave the way waves are made, no wind had pushed it, no tide had drawn it. The sea itself stood up from underneath, a single wall of water older than any thunder, rising out of the draw that had gone wrong under the hull, and Valani, with the cold flat clarity of a woman reading a manifest she cannot change, had nothing for it. The helm answered. The rudder bit and held and did nothing, the water swallowed the blade like a mouth. The sails were already down, furled against the fog, there was nothing to reach. The current that had carried them all day held them in its teeth, and the tide kind. Her second body, rebuilt plank by plank from the first ship's salvage, the ship she had mended with her own hands and sung to in Saravai work tunes, began to climb the wall of water sideways, listing, the deck screaming under the strain. Valani did not shake. It was not courage, it was the flat of the craft, the thing the craft had made of her. The world can stand on end, and the tiller is still yours. She called the orders in a voice that did not shake.
Falls on the backstay. All hands, hold the rail.
And the voice held as the rigging gave way, as the shrouds parted with reports like struck masts, as the sea took the foremast clean out of her, one sound, a crack like the world's spine, and the mast went over the side trailing the whole of her canvas, and the tide kind rolled into the hollow of the wave and did not come back. She saw it all, the way you see a wreck from a cliff, Melon against the chart cabin door, a gash opening on his forehead, his scholar's hands gone wide on the combing, his litany gone, nothing in his mouth but breath. Varen, the priest, reaching for a prayer, his lips moved on the shape of it and found nothing, and he closed his mouth and reached for a rope instead, and the rope took his weight, and the prayer went into the water with the rigging. Kale. Kale was on the deck, prone, one hand locked on the rail where the backstay used to be, and her face changed. She saw it the way you see a shift in the wind, the girl's eyes going wide, not with terror, with something else, and her free hand pressed flat to her sternum, and the sound that came out of her was not a scream. It was a note. Not the hum she had lived with for a week of sea, a thread under the girl's palm, this was the wire become a voice, the deep song rising in the spray, answering the way the wave had answered the fog. The sea was calling to her. Valani understood it in the same flat way she understood the manifest. The girl was not a passenger. The thing in the strait that had been waiting for this water, this moment, this girl's note.
She can stop it.
Valani thought. It was not a hope. It was a reading of a cargo she had known was aboard since the vault room. The girl in the lot house had reached into a song and stilled it like a candle. The sea was a song. The sea was screaming, and the girl had done this once, and she had never aimed it, and she did not know what it would cost. Valani could not stop her. She was at the tiller with the world on end and the ship dying in her hands, and all she had left was the flat of her voice and the shape of the choice passing across the girl's face, the same shape she had learned to read on her own face in 100 harbors, the shape called. There is nothing left but the thing I have been hiding.
Hold on.
Valani said. To the ship. To the girl. To the dark.
Whatever you are going to do, hold on.
The wave rose over them, and the world went green-gray, and Valani held the tiller with both hands and did not let go, and Kale's hand left the rail. The wave had a voice in it, and the voice was the sea's own song. The same shape that had lain under the keel in the glass calm, the same weight that had lain under the fog, now risen, now screaming, now taking the world apart around them. And Kale reached into it. There was no thinking. There was no choosing, no consent, the wire in her chest answered before she did, the way it had answered in the lot house, the way it had answered the stillness in the glass calm. The note rose out of her throat and went into the wave. Not loud, not a shout, a reaching. The same grammar as the vault. The same closing hand. She did not fight the wave with sound. She reached into the shape of its singing, into the note where it lived in the water, the way you reach to a candle's flame, and she closed her fingers on it and stilled it. The wave held. One moment, the wall of dark water above them, the spray suspended, the ship's scream gone quiet in the weight of the held breath, and Kale felt the whole of the sea's fury gathered in her hand the way she had felt the trap's voice gathered in the vault room. And she understood, in the ringing stillness, what she was doing. She was unsinging a sea. The same act that had cracked a ward seal and silenced a scroll, turned on the strait itself. Only shapers unsing. The text said, and the texts had never once in a thousand years imagined this, a girl from the Dales with the sea in her fist like a candle flame, closing her hand on the storm's root, not to unmake the wave. To stop it. The note went out of her. The wave went out with it. Not the sea falling, the sea being stilled, the wall stood a breath, and then it settled, the way a struck bell ceases to be struck, the whole green-gray mass of it folding down in rings from the hull outward, flattening, glassing, the spray hanging one moment longer and then letting go, and the tide kind. Her second body, tilted back toward the level with a groan like a woman waking. The strait stilled at the note. Silence. Real silence, not the fog's listening silence, a spent one, the silence of a room where the song has been stilled. The sea flat and dark and dead calm under them, the fog gray around them, the ship settling on the water the way a boat settles after a storm, and Kale stood at the rail with her hand still closed on a flame that was no longer there. And the fog leaned in. Not an attack. The gray drew close the way a held breath is released toward you, warm, wrong season warm, the whole weight of the presence turning toward the shape of what she had done, the way a listener turns toward a note they have been waiting their whole life to hear. It had heard her song before, the hair of a note, the words spoken back, the exchange in the fog, but this was not the same. This was the silencing itself, the reaching in, the closing hand, and in the shape of it the presence recognized something kin older, deeper, the grammar of a binding, the note that held the world together at its root. It did not speak. It did not name itself. It watched, and Kale stood in the middle of its watching with the spent note in her chest, and she knew, the way the wire knew when rain was coming, that the fog had been waiting for this. Not for a memory keeper who carried a word north. For a memory keeper who could still a sea. The word had been the other half of the summons. She had been the whole of it. The cost landed like the sea's own weight. Kale's hand was still closed on the absent flame when her knees gave, the note gone, the wire gone, the whole of her spent, the way a struck bell is spent after the bow leaves it, the sound still in the air and nothing left to make it. She went down on the deck, and the fog's warm attention followed her down, and she did not feel the planks, she felt the hollow where her chest had been, wider than the vault, the swallowed stone of the first unsing doubled into a stone she could not lift, the answer taken out of her strength. Valani caught her. She was at the tiller and then she was not, the trader's flat speed, no sound, the way she moved in a wreck, and she took Kale's weight before the deck did, one arm around her back, taking her down easy, the way you take a sail down easy so the wind does not tear it. She said nothing. Kale could not lift her head, the ship's sounds came around her, the water against the strakes, Melon's breath found again, the groan of the hull settling, the whole dead flat sea. And then Valani's voice, quieter than the sea, dry, the flat delivery cracked down the middle.
Ridiculous.
The words failed. Kale heard it in the shape of them, the same words that had meant. I am undone. In the dark below deck, and now the delivery was a lie and the truth was in it, the traitor who had watched her do what she could not, who could not protect her from the consequence of it, holding her like cargo that had come home, saying the words that meant I am undone and failing to hide the awe of it. The sea was still. The storm was gone. The strait had tested what she was worth, and it had paid the word back with the worth. The note answered from outside, the summons answered in full, and the answer had taken her strength with it like a tide going out. Varin stood at the rail. He was the only one standing, the man whose text had failed him twice. He had watched her unsing a scroll in a vault, and now he had watched her unsing a sea, and there was no interior to it, nothing Kale could read in his stillness but the stillness itself, a man rereading everything he believed, holding the rail, not praying. His formal sentences had gone. His conditionals had gone. What was left stood at the rail and looked at the dead flat water where a mountain of it had stood a moment ago, and his hands were very still on the wood. Melon's head was bleeding. Someone had bound it, Valani's hand, probably a strip of sailcloth, even over the gash, and his scholar's hands were white on his knees, and his litany had not come back. And he sat at the base of the broken mast and looked at Kale the way you look at a document that has been rewritten in front of you. Kale lay in Valani's arms with the hollow in her chest and the hum gone, spent, not absent, the thread out of her, the wire empty, the note given whole, and she did not know if it would ever come back. She did not know if she could do it again. She did not know if the sea had asked her to or she had asked the sea, or whether the asking and the answering had ever been separate things. The dead flat sea held them. The fog held them. Somewhere north, the Strait's attention, warm, patient, acknowledged, kept pace at the edge of hearing.
Hold the rail.
The litany said, in Melon's voice, somewhere behind her, a bare thread.
Hold the breath. Hold the note you carry north.
Her hand pressed to her sternum. The hollow was warm. The note, when it came back, would find her there. Dawn came, and the fog thinned, and the black cliffs of Vorn rose ahead of them out of the gray like the back of a sleeping thing. Kale woke to the sound of it, the sea against rock, the first real shore sound in a week of water, and the wreckage around her, and Valani's arm under her head, and the hum in her chest, quiet, present, a thread restrung in the night, holding its breath the way she held hers. The cliffs were obsidian, black, wet, sliced by steam vents that breathed wide into the dawn, black sand beaches at their feet, and at the base of them, cut into the rock, the mouths of caves, the only safe harbors on the ashen coast. The Tide Kind was a wreck of herself, foremast gone, deck scarred, rigging in ropes on the water, her second body bent but floating, making for the cave mouths the way a hurt animal makes for cover. Melon sat at the base of the broken mast, binding his head with a fresh strip, moving slow, his scholar's hands steadier than they had been in the fog. Varin stood at the rail and did not pray. Kale watched him not pray without looking at him directly, the set of his shoulders where the office had been, the way he looked at the black cliffs the way a man looks at a sealed door with a question on the other side of it. The doubter on the ship, certainty gone, replaced by a need to know. What was in the cliffs? What the cliffs knew. What the girl in his care was, that she could still a see. Behind them, the fog had not dispersed. At the edge of hearing, the fog hung, a gray wall at the top of the water, keeping pace, waiting. It did not chase. Never had. And Kale rearranged the whole gray passage into a single shape. It had conducted them, steered them, carried them, tested them, and now it waited, the way a held breath waits for the word that lets it go, and Kale understood both readings at once. The way you understand a chord, the fog was following, and the fog was waiting, and they were the same thing when the thing doing them was patient. It had heard her song. It would wait until the deep song rose again. And then, from the black shore, a hum. Low. Patient. Deliberate. Not the fog's voice, the fog had no voice, only her voice made wrong, and not wind and not sea, a living thing, watching from the rock. Kale's head turned before she decided it, the way you turn to a voice in a crowd, and the figure stood at the waterline on the black sand, still, broad, alone, head tilted as if listening to the water, and the hum under it, the hum in it, patient and deliberate as the tide, a note that had been kept for her. No words. No approach. The hum, the stillness, the watching for sight and sound only, and nothing else, and Kale knew the note on the shore was not a greeting. It was a test, or a question, or a rope thrown across the water, she could not tell, and the not telling was the point. She looked from the hum's direction to the fog behind her. The fog waited. The shore hummed. The black cliffs stood between them like a held note, and Kale crossed the worst sea in the known world carrying a word no one could read, and she had learned what it was for. The word was one half of a summons, and she had been the other, and the fog had hurt her. And the shore was humming back, and the world on the other side of the strait had been waiting for her longer than she had been alive. She could not sing back. Not yet, not like that, not the way the shore was humming, patient and deliberate as the tide. But the hum in her chest was still there, quiet, waiting for her to be ready, the way the fog waited, the way the shore waited, the way the whole gray north had been waiting since before she was born. The tide kind. Made for the cave harbor. Somewhere behind them, at the edge of hearing, the strait held its breath. Hold the rail. Hold the breath. Hold the note you carry north. End of volume 4.